Hello, Santa Cruz and KSCO 1080 AM listeners. My name is Becca Dukes, and I am so glad that you have decided to plug into Better by the Minute Live with Becca. Hey, let's just say hi to everybody around the world. With technology, I am so glad that we no longer have to stay within the walls of our own backyard, our own town, our own city. We are able to reach around the world and share the good news of what we can do to be empowered. And that is part of why I brought Better by the Minute Live with Becca to the KSCO radio program, is there are so many things that we can do. I know I used to feel stuck, and that was stuck financially, stuck mentally, stuck with my physical well-being. Even though I thought I was eating right, everything just was not working the way I wanted it to. I knew there was something missing. Well, I am bringing my real life experiences to the radio and sharing with everyone things that have empowered me to claim the life that I want to have physically, mentally, and emotionally. I mean, there's so many things that we can do. And tonight is just another night that we're going to bring to you some things that you can do on your own that will contribute to better mental health. I am so honored to have naturopathic doctor who was actually a nurse with the military for many, many years on the mainstream medical side. And she has just been an incredible mentor to me. As a mentor, she has shared so much information on what I can do to have a better health journey. I have totally rewritten my health journey. And this is why I am bringing to you Dr. Joanne Conway. Now, Dr. Conway, tell me a little bit about yourself that gives you some insight for our listeners in regards to your experience on mental health and the digestive system. Let's not forget that part.
No, absolutely not. And thank you so much, Becca. I'm delighted to be here with you. And yes, you make reference to the digestive system. And of course, you know that that's my passion. That's what I talk about all the time. But with respect to today's topic and the topic of mental health, it's something that is certainly first and foremost in the minds and hearts of many, especially at this particular point in time in our lives, because of all of the things that have been happening and going on. But a little bit about my background. I was a nurse for 40 years, and during that time, I took care of people who could no longer eat by mouth. And interestingly enough, in some of those situations, the people who could not eat by mouth were people who had serious mental health issues. I'm talking about eating disorder mental health issues like anorexia, where these people were so out of touch with what was going on with them with respect to what they were eating or not eating or how what they ate impacted them. And when we go through that kind of experience and learn from experiences like that, it's life-changing for the person who gets to see those people. I mean, one person in particular that I worked with, it was unbelievable because in her situation, she had bad anorexia and she knew it. And on an intellectual level, she could talk to you about everything that was going on in her body. She could talk to you about what was happening because she wasn't eating, what was happening because of her body image when she looked at herself in the mirror. She could discuss it all on an intellectual level, but we could never drill down and make a determination as to why she couldn't get past that and actually discuss it other than on an intellectual level. Emotionally, she couldn't do it. She was just stuck. Having had those experiences, the mental health aspect of health is very important to me. And so as we talk about this today, and as we go through this today, I'll highlight some of the things that do negatively impact our mental health and why we need to pay more attention to what's going on with ourselves. Would you like me just to start with basic stress?
You know, stress is kind of a big thing right now. So let's go ahead and just jump in.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the more common causes of stress. I'll just list them and then we'll highlight them and talk more about them. Certainly family and friends, life changes. Many people are going through extreme life changes at this particular point in time. Money, many people are really having issues with money problems at this particular time. Work, health issues. These are what we refer to as some of the more common causes of stress. Now, when we talk about stress, there was a life stress inventory that came out many, many years ago. And what it did was it took a look at people's stress level based on the things that were happening in their lives. It was set up with a point system. It was the Holmes-Rahe life stress inventory. If you scored 150 points or less, you had a relatively low amount of life change, low susceptibility to stress-induced health breakdown. If your point score was somewhere between 150 and 300, you had a 50% chance of health breakdown over the course of the next couple of years. And then if your score was 300 points or more, you had an 80% chance of health breakdown over the next couple of years. So this was a statistical prediction model. What we found was when we used it and we worked with people who were stressed and having health issues, it pretty much followed what they had predicted. So let's talk about some of the causes of work stress.
Sorry, before you get into the causes of work stress, when was this study done?
You know, I don't even remember. It was many, many years ago. I know that I first took it when I was in my 20s. So I know it's many years ago.
Yeah, the reason why I wanted to bring that up is this is information that was brought to light that was possibly suppressed for whatever reason that is still true today in as far as how stress affects our lives and our health.
Without a doubt. One of the more fascinating things is when you take the survey, it kind of highlights for you just how stressful your life is. You know, many people live day to day and they don't really have an idea of how what's going on in their life is really impacting them, and certainly not a good idea of how it's impacting them from the health perspective. They do that evaluation and they are like, oh my gosh, no wonder my life is so stressful. No wonder I'm having problems with health issues. No wonder I can't address the activities of daily living like I once did. And kind of highlights for people just how important it is to really sit up and take notice and pay attention to what's going on in your life.
It's amazing, you know, people don't realize the impact of stress as they're going through day by day, just trying to get through the day. They don't understand just trying to get by, trying to cope is really affecting their health.
And that is so true. You know, today, some of the things that we'll go into will be the things that we know that we can do to help lessen the impact. So much of what is going on in the world today stresses people out. But one of the things that people are not keenly aware of is the impact that other things are having on their body's ability to handle stress. And those are things that you and I have talked about before. We talk about diet. We talk about the composition of diet. We talk about the gut and gut health and how all of those things actually impact a person's ability to deal with stress, impact a person's ability to have good, clear thinking. And those are the things that I hope to touch on today, just so that people have a better understanding that although there is a lot of stress, we can help ourselves, but we have to have those tools. We have to know what it takes to help ourselves.
That was something over the last 6 years since I have been following you and listening to your lectures. I look back in retrospect into that time period where I was bedridden. I had been given so many diagnoses that I had actually accepted those labels and accepted the fact that, not really accepted the fact, actually, I knew there was something I was missing. But it was like, okay, my aunt has gone down this road and I saw how she was. I did make some decisions not to follow some of the things that she had done, like surgery, that, you know, she was promised to have a whole new life. Well, it did give her a whole new life. And 26 surgeries later, she went from 5'4" and thin and beautiful to not being able to stand up straight, barely 4'9", still beautiful. I still love her. She's in so much pain. She has so much digestive issues. Those were just things that I'm like, okay, I don't want to go down that path. So I kept searching. And that's when I came across you. It was amazing when I heard you the first time, and looking at that time of my life, I'm like, that makes so much sense. I mean, I was going through divorce. I had a child that was a heroin addict, you know, all of these things that I was trying to work through in my mind, I was breaking down, not just in my mind. You know, I wasn't making good choices on eating, even though I thought I was doing right. It wasn't following the right food pyramid, as you would say. So share with us more, Dr. Conway. I love listening to you.
Well, I'm happy to do that. Let's just highlight some of the things that would make work stressful. Because a lot of people are trying to hold down a job along with the other things that they're doing. But let's just highlight a few of the things that might cause work stress, like being unhappy in your job. How many people do we know that come home from work and say, oh, I love my job. I love my job. I can't wait to get back there tomorrow. Probably not very many.
Well, and at that time, I had just finished my stint of working in the Department of Corrections in the education department. That was a little bit stressful.
Yeah. And although you probably felt like the job on one level was rewarding, I'm sure you felt on the other level, it was very stressful.
Absolutely. I mean, mentally, I felt good because I was helping people get information, but even driving to work, walking through that gate with the knowledge of what could happen was so stressful.
Oh, and that's one of the causes of work stress. Working under dangerous conditions. And, you know, put yourself in a situation where you're working in a correctional facility, it can be potentially dangerous. From that perspective, I can certainly see where that would have been something that would contribute to work stress in your situation. You know, there are other things that make people stressful at work, you know, working under a heavy load, having too much responsibility, working long hours. One of the really important things for people to consider is when we talk about work stress itself, having poor management, having people above you that are not management people. They, you know, they put you in a situation where you have unclear expectations of what's expected of you. There's no say on your part in the decision-making process. And so that's very stressful. And then that leads to being very insecure about any chance that you might have for advancement or perhaps risk of termination. All of these things, you know, don't make you necessarily want to get up in the morning and go to work.
I've been there, not just in corrections, but in other jobs as well.
Oh, sure. And I think many of us have, you know, it depends on the situation, but we may take a job that we feel good about, or we may be taking a job because it's the only one available. That's two different ways to look at work. You need to work to bring home the paycheck. Perhaps it's not the job of your choice. So let's go ahead, go to work, do the best we can. But the stress that is associated with that is sometimes overwhelming.
And even if you do have a great job, that stress of when you leave that job and headed home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then you have all of that stress as well, all of the stress that is associated with family. Am I doing the right thing by my children? Am I doing the right thing with this job? Am I working too many hours? Am I neglecting other issues? And all of this becomes a part of it. And certainly, when we talk about it in terms like that, we have to understand that most people find themselves in a situation where they feel like they have no choice. They feel like they have no out. And so they struggle and continue to do what they feel like they need to do in this job. Yes, it's putting food on the table, but what's it doing to them? And how can they help themselves if they're in a situation like that? And many people can't get out of that situation. For many people, depending upon where they are or what their circumstances are, the job that they have may be the only job that they can take. may be the only job that's available to them. And if they are stressed as a result of that, what are some of the things that they can do that will lessen that stress? What are some of the things that they can do that will make them better able to handle that stress, better able to tolerate that stress? And those are the things that I think are really important for people to know. We all have some level of stress. There's no two ways about it. But how do we handle that stress? And so there are various different things that we can do. And those are the kinds of things that I enjoy talking about, helping people understand how they can lessen the impact of the stress in their lives.
Absolutely. And there are so many different things that we can do on different levels. But one thing that we're going to focus on today, and this is what I love about what I do with Better by the Minute Life. We're bringing the positive things to life that are empowering, giving people hope, taking things that, you know, may seem like they're out of their control, and giving them the information that really shows them, yes, there's things that you personally can do that you're probably not going to hear anywhere else, because what is brought to us from the government is not necessarily beneficial to us, especially our nutrition. And that's one thing, Dr. Conway, that you have really been focusing on and bringing that awareness of what we can do individually. And I have appreciated you for doing that. And that's why I wanted you to come on with me today, is because you are bringing that awareness, and I want to bring it to a whole new audience.
Well, first of all, let's touch on some of those things that are a little bit more negative so that we can then bring it around to how to make it more positive. There are various things that we need to really understand with respect to how stress affects the body. I mean, stress can affect your body by impacting the health of your skin. People have breakouts like acne or eczema, dermatitis, skin rashes. Those can, in fact, be due to stress. What about your head? If you have issues with mood or anger, depression, irritability, all of these things can be happening because of stress. Your heart, when we talk about how stress can actually impact the heart, stress can increase blood pressure. It can increase your heart rate. It can increase your risk of heart attack and stroke. Let's talk about the stomach. And this, of course, getting into the digestive system, which is my area of expertise. When we talk about the stomach itself, we know that stress can lead to peptic ulcer disease, irritable bowel disease, irritable bowel syndrome, food allergies, reflux, nausea, weight fluctuations. All of those things can be impacted. And then we take it one step further, go into the intestine. And if you are stressed, you are not able to absorb nutrients properly. You'll have a reduced metabolism. You'll have decreased enzymatic output. Enzymes are so necessary to help break down those foods. You have an increased risk for inflammatory bowel disease, diabetes, so many different things. And when we talk about the pancreas and how stress can impact the pancreas, it can result in elevated secretions of insulin, which, if chronic, can ultimately lead to diabetes, which can ultimately lead to damaging of the arteries, can lead to obesity. The reproductive system, decreased testosterone and estradiol production can lead to reduced fertility. This is also a major thing that can lead to stress. When people are together, husband and wife, happy, they want to have a baby, but they are so stressed because of their environment that they cannot reproduce because of what stress actually does to testosterone and estradiol levels. Also, your joints and muscles. Now, a lot of people don't think about the joints and muscles being impacted by stress, but certain aches and pains, inflammation, tension, all of these can impact your joints and muscles. We know, for example, if you think about it, people can say, oh, I must be stressed. My neck and my shoulders are so tight. that's an outward sign, and most people recognize that right away. But there are also other things that are going on. They're a little bit more insidious that people don't recognize. And then when we talk about stress in the immune system, significant impact. It suppresses the effectiveness of the immune system overall. If you are stressed, ultimately, because of your diet, have high levels of inflammation, all of these are going to lead to chronic health conditions. So it's recognizing that there are a lot of things that can, in fact, impact your body because of stress. As we go on, we're going to talk about some of the things that we know and can do that are going to lessen that stress. You know, one of the things that I talk about a lot, and you know this, is the gut-brain connection and the impact of the gut and the brain. When we talk about that gut-brain connection or gut-brain access or brain-gut access, there's so much out there in the literature now talking about that, something that we didn't talk about when I was in nursing school. You know, back in the 70s, we didn't talk about the gut-brain connection. There was really no such thing in the literature. There was no such thing to be discussed back then. But now it's a very popular topic, and it's because we have recognized that what goes on in the gut and leaves the gut can impact brain function, and thereby what goes on in the brain can impact gut function. And it's an axis. It's by way of the vagus nerve, and things leaving the gut, going out into the circulation, traveling to the brain by way of the vagus nerve can impact brain function. By the same token, when that brain function is impacted in a negative way, those messages that leave the brain going back to the gut can also be impacted in a negative way. So it's that vicious cycle. One of the things that I find so fascinating is that field of the understanding of the impact of what's going on in your gut on your brain, and then the impact of what's going on in your brain on your gut and gut function.
Amazing how everything is connected.
And that is so true. I know when I was in nursing school back in the 1970s, we did what most medical schools, nursing schools do. We studied each and every system in the body. The one thing that has become so obvious to me studying from the naturopathic perspective is you can't study and understand any system in isolation. You have got to recognize and understand every system impacts every other system. Of course, having my background in medicine and nursing and working in a facility and working using the mainstream medicine model, where if a person came in with an issue, we dealt with that issue based on which system was involved, flip that, and now looking at it from the naturopathic perspective and how each system impacts the other system. I called it compartmentalized medical health, compartmentalized health. Why? Because that's what we did. We put everything into a specific compartment. You can't do that. The body's a whole.
No, we can't. And we are going to be talking more about that after this short break. You are listening to Better by the Minute Live with Becca on 1080 AM KSCO. And we are back with Better by the Minute Live with Becca. My name is Becca Dukes, and I am joined tonight with Dr. Joanne Conway. And we are talking about what we can do individually, being empowered to break through that gut-brain connection, and how the stress of everything that is going on right now is affecting our health. Dr. Conway, go ahead and continue. We were talking about how everything within the body is connected.
It's so true, Becca, and was alluding to the fact that when I worked in the conventional medicine world, if a person came in with a symptom or a list of symptoms, it used to be so frustrating for me because I always had the basic understanding that no two people are the same. We're just not. And I used to get real frustrated when we would order pharmaceuticals or the doctor would order pharmaceuticals for people. And it didn't matter if you were 5'2", 100 pounds or 6'2", 200 pounds, you got the same dose of medication. It's like, how can that work? How can that be true? But the other thing that impacted me in a very negative way was the fact that when a person came in, for example, if they had some type of an endocrine issue, we focused on that endocrine issue. And if they came in with a certain set of symptoms, we got a set of orders, got printed out of the computer, and everyone fell into some algorithm. And we actually treated them based on what their symptoms were. And this is one of the things that is impactful in my world. If you don't delve more deeply into the cause of that symptom, you're never going to get ahead of it. You're never going to be able to adequately address the issue and the problem. For example, when you're working with someone, they are stressed or having significant stress, it's not enough to say, oh, you're having significant stress and you're depressed as a result. Well, let's go ahead and give you a bit of an antidepressant and then need to help you sleep. So we'll also give you a sleeping pill. Well, that's putting a Band-Aid on the problem, if you will. And from that perspective, you're treating the symptom. But when I work with clients, what I want to know is, why are you stressed? Why are you depressed? And what is it about your daily lifestyle that is making that stress worse? Or what is it about what you're eating or not eating or taking as a supplement or not taking as a supplement that is ultimately impacting how that stress or that depression is impacting you? It's always look to the root cause. And that's one of the things that so oftentimes people don't think about. I have a symptom. Let's treat the symptom. Let's get it taken care of. I'm overwhelmed by the symptom. I want a drug to fix it. Well, that's one way of looking at it. But the more important way of looking at it, in my opinion, is what's causing that symptom to start with.
That's one thing that I really like about the Institute of Holistic Health, where you have contributed so many lectures to the continued education portion. It's available to everybody, being able to look into your own health and your health of your family is incredible. Like you were saying, looking at the root cause with the Institute of Holistic Health, that's where they start. They start at the root causes and how deficiencies, finding those deficiencies, really affect health. And then, of course, the solution. So if anybody's interested in more information about that, you can go to my website, Better by the Minute Life, and request to have information about our Certified Holistic Health Coach program from the Institute of Holistic Health. Dr. Conway, your lectures that are included in that training are so valuable. I have used them over and over again in being able to help myself and also my clients. Your work is not going unheard, that's for sure.
Well, and I appreciate that, Becca. You know, putting together those lectures is, you know, something that is a little bit time consuming. A lot of the information, I do a little bit of research before I even put together the lecture. And it's because what I want is to be able to say to people that this is what the problem is, and this is how we can address it. I think that that's a big part of the reason why you find those lectures so invaluable. I'm looking at what is causing this to happen. why are we experiencing these things? And just like what we're talking about today, why are we experiencing stress? And what can we do to kind of mediate that stress?
Absolutely. So let's go into what we can do.
I am happy to share that. And, you know, the first place I start is always with understanding good food and bad food. I refer to the good food as those things that we know nourish our bodies. The bad food I refer to as the offending foods, because so oftentimes people will say to me, I can't believe you put bread into the bad category. Well, bread is not bread like it was 50 years ago. Wheat is not wheat like it was 50 years ago. When we talk about wheat, wheat has been modified to the point where it doesn't even look the same. And I always remind people, I know when I was growing up, if I was traveling across the country, I could drive by amber waves of grain. The wheat was tall, it would flow in the breeze. It was an absolutely beautiful sight. You don't ever see that anymore because we have hybridized it. It's now maybe 18 inches tall. It does not blow back and forth. And the actual structure of the kernel of wheat is significantly larger than it was back then. And it's because, again, hybridization and the other things that we've done. So although, if the facts be known, we as human beings really don't actually have adequate enzymes to break down wheat, even if it's good wheat, we're not created that way. We definitely don't have the wherewithal to be able to break down the current wheat. And so now when people say, I can't believe you're telling me I shouldn't eat bread or pasta or cakes or cookies, it's because we know, and research is out there, we know that gluten actually impacts 100% of the people who consume it. You may have minimal symptoms, you may have no symptoms, or you can have celiac, or you can be anywhere on the spectrum. And this is where it gets a little bit confusing for people, because oftentimes they'll say, oh, I can eat wheat, it doesn't bother me. I don't struggle with wheat. I don't have a problem with wheat. I don't have the gas, the bloating, the cramps. No, you may not have those outward signs, but I'm going to tell you, based on research, that you are impacting in a very negative way your body's ability to be able to break down and absorb foods. It has everything to do with the impact that gluten actually has on the inside lining of the gut, where so much of the absorption takes place, especially in the small intestine. So that's just one example. When we talk about offending foods, we're talking about those things that we know impact the health of the digestive system, which ultimately impacts the health of every other system in your body. This is one of the more fascinating things for me. I've focused on the gut for a long time. And throughout the last 20 or so years, as I focused on the gut, I've learned a lot in terms of how gut health impacts the rest of the body. Fascinatingly enough, there's a lot of research being done now that speaks specifically to how the health of your gut impacts every other system in the body. And I can remember there was a point in time before the last couple of years when every time I turned around, the news outlets, and it didn't matter if it was Google News or Yahoo News or whatever, every day there was another article talking about the impact of gut health on some other system in the body. And I can remember one in particular, they were really drilling down. And this is always exciting for me because it is my field of expertise. It is where I get most passionate. But one of the articles was talking about the impact of a healthy gut on the structure and function of muscles in the elderly. That's how much they were drilling down. For me, that was very exciting because understanding and recognizing the impact of gut health as it relates to every other system in the body is where I get excited. This is where my passion is.
And when you think about it, I mean, we can have somebody that's in their 30s, 40s, 50s, just be the perfect picture of health and muscular and well-formed. But then you take that person 30, 40 years later, they haven't been able to maintain that And it's exactly because of what you're talking about right now.
That's so true. That is so true. And people say, oh, well, I can eat gluten. It doesn't impact me. Well, you may not have the outward signs or symptoms now, but think about what it's going to be doing for you. And you're exactly right. Think about what it's going to be doing for you over the long haul. And how is it going to be for you 20 years from now? How's it going to be for you 30 years from now? And if you want to live to be a healthy older person, you have to recognize and understand that some of the things that you're doing now are going to impact you later on in life, whether you have the outward symptoms now or not. And this is because of the research that has been done and because of what we know and understand. I always start out with what I refer to as the good food, bad food list, and just helping people understand that the foods that are on the good food list are those foods that we know will have a positive impact and will not have a negative impact on your overall health, especially from the gut perspective.
People may be thinking, well, Becca, you've done a good foods, bad foods list, you know, episode before. Why do you keep saying it? The reason why I'm bringing it up again and bringing Dr. Conway up and introducing you to her, and we're talking about the good foods, bad foods list, is because it is so important. It's paramount that we look at the root causes. And those root causes of disease and the things that are going on in our brain all throughout our body have to do with our environment. And that includes the foods that we put in our mouth.
Absolutely. If you just think about it like this, there's not a one of us that is the same person we were when we were born or when we were 2 or 10, or I don't know how young your audience is, but progressively over time, we have evolved and we have changed. How has that happened? That has happened because we have taken food in. That food has been broken down into the molecular structures necessary to do the jobs at the cellular level. And that has made us who we are today. Now, was it good? Was it questionable? Was it bad? Did it have a negative effect? Sometimes those are things that become obvious right away. For example, if you eat something you're allergic to, you know it right away. But sometimes those things do not become obvious until much later on in life. And that's why when I work with people, I have to help them to understand you may not have that outward symptom today, but I'm going to tell you that research has shown that X can happen. Do you want to wait for X to happen and for the horrible manifestations of X? Or do you want to think about perhaps a healthier approach and don't ever let yourself get in a situation where X could happen to you?
So if you look at it now and do things to prevent that X, it is so much cheaper. And 2, you can enjoy life longer. That's something that I experienced here at 50. I feel better now than I did when I was in my 20s and 30s, and especially in my 40s, early 40s, when I found that my issue, my underlying cause, had to do with the fact that I was taking all that organic grain and making all my own flour and making all of my own pastries and baked goods and cooking from scratch, but they were coming from ingredients that were actually harmful to my body. And it was causing that breakdown.
That's right. And it's the knowing and the understanding that is going to have the positive impact. You know, looking at diet, one of the things that we have to pay attention to, and there's so much more being done now looking at the research around this, but we have to have a better understanding of how certain things in our diet negatively impact us. When we talk about that, let's talk about sugar, for example. Talk about the impact of sugar and the negative impact of sugar. We know back several years ago, it was all around fat. You wanted to do low fat, no fat. Well, when you consider macronutrients in food, we have protein, fat, and carbohydrate. Those are the 3 things that make up foods, along with, of course, minerals and vitamins and so forth. But the macronutrients are your fats, your protein, and your carbohydrate. So if I'm going to take carbohydrate out of the diet, or I'm sorry, I'm going to take fat out of the diet. Well, I've got to have protein and I've got to have carbohydrate. And so for a long time, it was the low fat, no fat craze and how we'd all be healthier if we didn't eat fat. What that led to is we all got fatter if we weren't eating fat. And how did that happen? Well, low fat, no fat drove high carbohydrate. And high carbohydrate has a very negative impact on the body. When we talk about high carbohydrate and talk about sugars, sugars have a negative impact from various different perspectives. Let's, for example, pick on fructose. Now, a lot of people say, but fructose is fruit sugar. Absolutely, fructose is fruit sugar. And if you're eating the whole fruit, you're not going to have the negative impact of fructose. Because if you're eating the whole food, which is the way our bodies were designed to consume food, if you're eating the whole food, you have the fiber and you have the other things associated with that food to make it digestible and to allow it to be utilized properly. If instead you're eating fructose, for example, in the case of high fructose corn syrup, and if you pay attention, everything that's prepackaged and processed has high fructose corn syrup in it. Okay, that's fast food. You know, we have become a society where we just consume fast food. What is fast food? Well, fast food is food that's devoid of nutrients, if you will. No fiber, nothing that's healthy, in my opinion. And so when we talk about fructose in particular, high fructose corn syrup, which was discovered in some foreign country, I can't remember if it was Japan, I think it was Japan in the 60s, and then it actually became part of our food supply in the late 70s. And if you follow the research, you can see where the introduction of high fructose corn syrup coincides with when people started to become so obese. Now, there are a couple of different reasons for that. First of all, high fructose corn syrup is from corn, an inexpensive way to sweeten food, but it has a negative impact in several different ways. First of all, it's not recognized as a carbohydrate source. The body doesn't know what to do with it, so it stores it immediately as fat. The second thing that happens is it stands in the way of the function of the hormone leptin. Leptin is that hormone that signals the brain that says, you know, we have enough fat on board. We can kick up the metabolic rate and burn up some of this fat, or we don't have enough fat on board. Well, that high fructose corn syrup stands in the way of that message ever getting to the brain. So the brain never knows. And the brain thinks, well, wait a minute, we don't have enough fat on board. So we have to keep eating. We have to keep eating so that we increase our fat load so that if something should happen and we don't have a meal, we have some fat that we can burn up for energy. The other thing it does is it stands in the way of the function of the hormone ghrelin. Ghrelin is that hormone produced in the stomach, sends a message to the brain, I'm satiated, I've had enough to eat, life is good. That message never gets to the brain. And that's one of the reasons why when people eat processed foods, or a really good example is when people drink soft drinks that are sweetened with high fructose corn syrup, they can't get enough. They're drinking them all day long. Well, that's because the body's being driven to drink more or being driven to seek more what it's looking for. The body's always going to be looking for what it's going to need to satiate itself. In the case of high fructose corn syrup, you're never going to get there. And that's one of the reasons why. And then the other thing too, that is so important for people to understand is the impact fructose has on the body's ability to absorb certain nutrients, especially minerals. When we talk about specific minerals and vitamins that are negatively impacted by high fructose corn syrup, is it any wonder? I mean, in particular, when we start talking about certain vitamins and minerals, certain things that we know are critically important for brain function, for example, iron. It's essential for oxygen delivery. If you don't have enough oxygen, it's going to impact your brain function. Additionally, iron is needed for the production of dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter. And that neurotransmitter is for motivation, and GABA, which is a neurotransmitter that helps to calm us down. So there's one example, iron. And then, of course, your B vitamins. I can't speak enough about the importance of the B vitamins and the function of the B vitamins with respect to brain health. If we're talking about folate, for example, It's essential for DNA synthesis, red blood cell production. But when it comes to the brain, what we know is if you are folate deficient, you can have poor immune function, chronic fatigue, as well as brain and mood problems, anxiety, depression, apathy, confusion. The list goes on and on and on. B6 is essential for many of the metabolic processes in the body, but it's also very important for helping the body to get adequate oxygen delivery and production of serotonin and norepinephrine and GABA. So, you know, it's not enough to say, oh, well, I'll just make sure that I will take my minerals, or I'll make sure that I take my vitamins. If you're taking your minerals and you're taking your vitamins, one of the things that we know is you can't out-supplement a bad diet. And so you can take all your minerals and you can do what you think is you're doing to better yourself from the standpoint of being healthy. But if you're eating foods that are impacting whether or not your body can even absorb some of these minerals and trace minerals, you're not going to get ahead of the game. Magnesium. Magnesium is a mineral that's a cofactor for more than 300 different enzymes. And when we talk about it, again, it's essential for energy production and it can activate GABA receptors. A magnesium deficiency can cause lots of different neurological problems. When we talk about those neurological problems, I'm talking about things like anxiety, depression, fatigue, panic attacks, all of these things. What about zinc? You know, many people don't get enough zinc. Zinc, again, a mineral cofactor, an antioxidant. It's essential for healthy cells, for our immune system function, thyroid function, cognitive function. And we know that zinc deficiency is linked to anxiety, depression, and concentration. And it's also necessary for the function of GABA once again. So looking at that, and given all of that, if we know that the consumption of sugar will stand in the way of our body being able to absorb specific nutrients, those are just a few that are specific to brain health and anxiety and stress and whether or not we can handle the activities of daily living. It's not enough to say to someone, oh, you need to take good supplements. You have to also help them understand that you cannot do the things that are going to impact whether or not your body absorbs these supplements. And then, of course, the function of the gut, which, you know me, I can talk about incessantly, but when we talk about the function of the gut and whether or not we have a healthy microbiome and whether or not we have a healthy balance of good bacteria, bad bacteria, all of that impacts whether or not we even absorb things through the digestive system. It's multifaceted.
And when we're not absorbing things through the digestive system, that is going to lead to the body's inability to function as it should. Now, you had mentioned cofactors. I know there's a lot of TV doctors that just push individual nutrients, but you mentioned cofactors. We're going to have to continue this. There's no doubt about this. But share with us the importance of those cofactors.
It's so critically important. And, you know, one of the things that is so frustrating to me, and no matter who you're listening to, no matter what functional nutrition practitioner you're listening to, you're going to find yourself in a situation where those people are going to be talking to you about, well, you need to have magnesium for healthy brain function. You need to have B vitamins for healthy brain function. When we talk about mineral cofactors, what we're talking about is those things that make our vitamins work and make other minerals work. So mineral cofactors are critically important. When we talk about the body not being able to absorb the nutrition that we're taking in, oftentimes we don't have adequate cofactors to ensure that that absorption is taking place. So when we talk about cofactors are critically important because it helps to ensure that what we're taking in is broken down and utilized properly. And to your point that you were making a few minutes ago, you know, we talk to people all the time and they say, oh yeah, my doctor wants me to take this zinc, for example, or my doctor wants me to take B vitamins, or, and oftentimes it's just B12. We're going to get B12 shots. We refer to this as fractionated nutrition. It's okay to say you need B12, but the important thing to understand is if you start treating with B12, you're impacting, again, in a negative way, the body's ability to absorb the other B vitamins. B should always be in complex. You shouldn't do a singular B. The minerals, the vitamins, the trace minerals, again, should always be in complex, meaning taking a product that's going to provide for you everything that your body needs in the proper ratios. So fractionated nutrition is where people get into a lot of trouble because they don't really realize that by taking, for example, by taking a bunch of selenium, but not taking the cofactors necessary for that selenium to be absorbed properly, you're not going to get the full benefit. One really good study came out several years ago, and it was talking about people using vitamin C and whether or not vitamin C was good for you. And what the study was about was using vitamin C from a whole food source versus vitamin C from a laboratory. That led us to the understanding that vitamin C used in the body needs copper. And what was happening was these people who were trying to avoid cardiovascular issues were actually developing cardiovascular issues because the copper was being pulled from the vascular system to help the body to break down the vitamin. There's so much to know and to understand, but again, fractionated nutrition is not the way to go. We need to have whole food source vitamins. We need to be in a situation where what we're taking in is going to be utilized properly. And that's why whole food source is so important. And that's why minerals and trace minerals are so important.
And all of this information is so important. I love the fact that, you know, the Institute of Holistic Health provides your lectures that help empower and bring knowledge to population that's open to receive it, or those who are thinking, like I did, there's got to be something else. There's got to be something I'm missing. And it comes down to our food. Dr. Conway, I know that you are also an author and you have a lot of information that you're able to share with the public. Where do we find that information?
You can go to my website. My website is DR, so DRJ Conaway, CONAWAY.com, DRJConaway.com. And there you can get my books and my recordings. You can set up a consultation, drjconaway.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Conaway.
Thank you.
And don't forget to check out my website, Better by the Minute Life with Becca, where we have all of the replays from our episodes and also information about my guests and how you can get in contact with them to hear more about what they have found to lead to a Better by the Minute life. Thank you everybody for joining us. Stay tuned as we bring more about what can empower you to achieve that Better by the Minute life. Bye for now.